and welcome to Elite Cadre, the Care Bear podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Alex.
Wait, there's no Kurt, so I must be Nick.
And this is Norbert, sitting in for Kurt.
I think that's an improvement. What do you think?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm much too short.
Nah, yeah. World's tallest wargamer. It's kind of overrated. This week, we'll be talking about the ETC, press gangers, and looking at some light news. First up, in the news, we've had two models, well, three, I suppose, previewed. The Naga Night Lurker, first of all.
I do like the way that you said light news, but these are obviously favour the dark, the Naga Night Lurker.
Have you bought yourself a new lamp, have you, Mike?
No, I've actually moved the existing one further away, so I'm further in the shadows. The Night Lurker. When I first saw the picture of this, I thought, that looks serpentine and fairly horrible. Then I zoomed in and saw the weird retracted centipede legs, and it just took on a whole new level of creepy.
Oh yeah, look at them.
Yeah, see, now once you see them, it's like, I can't unsee those.
Mm.
They're fairly nasty.
So what do you guys think about it compared to the Scorn Light Beast?
That's exactly what I was thinking. It looks quite like the Scorn one, only you can see its entire body and where it would curl round at the back for the tail, as opposed to just appearing out of the duck.
Is it the Razor Worm, the Scorn one?
Apparently? Yeah. Yes, the Razor Worm.
Yeah. That is an interesting comparison. But to be honest, Legion seems to be getting more and more things that are curled up on the base. It's kind of getting weird.
It doesn't look terribly Legion-like, somehow.
I think the head does, but if you kind of cover the head, it could be pretty much any faction, almost.
Mm, yeah.
I think it looks sort of like the same... The lower half of it looks very similar to the... Apart from the legs, to the Seraph and things that are curled up. The It is the Seraph, isn't it? Yeah. Seraph Angelus, one of them. But the way it's curled round looks like those.
I'll be honest, Legion beasts kind of meld into one in my mind because they all have roughly the same kind of face.
They don't have that definitive silhouette.
They kind of do, but they're more defined by their arms than anything else on them.
Yeah.
Because you have the Scythian with the massive overhanging Tyranid arms. That's the best way I can put it. And then you got the Carnivian with the weird paws, and I suppose the Ravagor with the flame breath, that's kind of an almost a unique silhouette.
No, the Ravagor looks very similar to the Carni. If you take the flame off it, you can very often not tell them apart. And there was a there was somebody who converted their Carnies to have the flame breath, and it got a bit confusing because they look like Ravagors.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I can see how that comes to the whole conversion policy, really, doesn't it? That there's a TO somewhere going, do I allow these or not? Which will be more hilarious? But yes, that's the Night Lurker. Isn't that the one that gives blessed stuff to Legion?
Yes, yes it is.
Let us discuss it no more. Let us move on.
Let's hope it doesn't really come out. It's just they're just PP trolling us.
You'd know all about trolling, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Seems a war room, really, isn't it?
Oh, don't start.
War Room was released today. It's only got another hour and a half. We maybe will see it before the end of the day.
To be fair, on American time, they've still got quite a lot longer, you know.
Yeah, is Seattle, what, kind of 8 hours behind us at the moment?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So, but anyway, let's just move on from War Room to, I would say, Pastures Greener, but unfortunately it's Asphyxius 3. With his little assistant.
Someone else who likes to hide in the dark.
Yes. I actually quite like this model.
Oh, he harkens back to Asphyxius 1's model a little bit, doesn't it?
I'll be honest, I haven't had much table time across from Asphyxius 1, so I don't really know the silhouette that well.
I see what you mean, and I agree there. Yeah, he does, especially the... I'm trying to remember, but on Asphyxius 2, the vials and things for the soul cages, they weren't so prominent on him.
Mm-hmm.
And on Asphyxius 1, they were there, and it was like, those are cool. And they went away, and now they've come back. It's like, awesome.
yeah.
To be fair, there were, even in the art, there were more changes than people were that were seeing. They looked at it and went, "Oh, it's a skull with some armor. Yes, it's Asphyxius. It's clearly unchanged." But there were more changes there than people actually realized. The only thing with this one, he does seem to be leaning back away from his own base.
It's exactly what Asphyxius 2 does. It's exactly the same sort of curve that Asphyxius 2 has.
I could see that having to require some
help. I've seen you admiring Asphyxius' curves before, Nick.
Normally people go for Denny, but Nick's a special one. I could see people having to put some ballast in the front of that base.
I don't know. I think what I would quite like to do, if I picked up this model, would be to pick up Asphyxius 2's base and put Asphyxius 3 on Asphyxius 2's base.
Yeah, it could
interesting.
Work. So, but then you have kind of the whole, you know, does that, will that make him look too much like Asphyxius 2 or Epic Asphyxius?
I think the fact the weapon is unique as a sword and it was a spear before is what you can probably get away with.
Yeah. Again, that's down to conversion policies of individual tournaments, and if in doubt, always check with the TO. Really? Yep.
With plenty of notice.
Yes. Not just 5 minutes of, I brought this. What do you think? Like, yeah, sure, whatever. The third model that he comes with is Vociferon.
Third model?
He's neat.
Well, I like him. With his weird standard made of soul cages.
I like how his armor and it kind of matches Asphyxius 3's. Makes a nice pair like that.
Yeah. They do kind of echo each other a little bit, which is nice.
I'm curious to read the fluff about them, if I'm honest, because Asphyxius has normally been a very selfish and very... He keeps himself to himself and keeps his plans secret. So he's now picked up this minion to do his bidding. Yes, I'd quite like to see the interaction between the two of them.
Yeah.
To be fair, Asphyxius, the one story I've actually read of him that did amuse me was sort of, you know, sailing across the ocean with someone else on his ship. They get near to land, like, oh, we're going to go into land and I can just walk off onto the beach. He's like, no, you're jumping over the side with the rest of everyone else. You can walk along the bottom, mate. It's like, yeah, I like this. I approve. He's a man who doesn't mess about. Well, less a man, more of a skull in armor, really. But, you know.
He was once a man.
Well, he was once a druid.
He's actually, did he ever find his own soul? Because that was one of the earlier storylines. He was kind of looking for his own soul, wasn't he? In one of the Mark I books, I remember, you know, he was looking for his soul. So I think there's definitely ulterior motives within Asphyxius, and I think the character is, because he keeps himself to himself. I think he has a lot of kind of designs for greatness himself, and, you know.
Well, I'll be honest, desiring to be a god, pretty much, you know, that's kind of as high as you can really aspire to, in all honesty. Yeah,
pretty much.
The piece of fiction I would really like to read is how he came across that sword with the eye in it now. I mean, I know it's supposed to be a Lich Lord dead, but that kind of just happened. I found that to be a huge gap.
Well, it was in, was it not in Apotheosis? Because that was his spear, is the epic version. It's the same, Lich Lord.
Yeah, it doesn't say how it happened, though.
No, well, that's he became the Lich Lord by killing Malathrax, was it?
De Mortis.
De Mortis, sorry.
Yeah. The Lich Lord De Mortis. And that's how he took his place as a Lich Lord. There is a story about it, because I know I've read it. But I don't think you actually see him kill him. It's sort of the aftermath.
Sure.
And it's got Venothrax and Terminus in it, quite prominently.
Yeah, Venothrax. That's one of the few times you'll ever see him. Certainly won't see him on the table.
Well, there's the whole fluff as well in relation to the... Domination book, that is kind of heavily revolving around Crix, although it's obviously a Hordes book. I mean, I don't know, have you guys read the fluff from Domination?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
I've read most of it.
Kind of spoiler alert for those who haven't read it. Essentially, there's Balder in his, obviously now, epic version. He's communing through an ancient ley line site, essentially to stop Kryx being able to take the Athank that they've found. I can't think, whose Athank is it? Is it? Because Thagrosh consumed...
I was going to say, is it Pyromalthic, or does that...
No, that it's... I think that was the one that Thagrosh consumed.
I don't think it's named. I don't think the one that found his name.
Something was it?
Scalefang or something like that.
Scarfang. Yeah, Scalefang. I don't know. There was one of the ones that was around in the Scorn book. But I mean, I've not read all the faction book fluff yet. So I mean, I'm not 100% sure on that kind of element of it. But kind of in the end of that, Baldur is successful in stopping them going through the caverns. So you know, are we going to see in? I mean, again, there's the fluff spoilers out there for Wrath. I've not seen what they are, but is that going to have kind of a knock-on effect in Domination? From Domination, sorry.
Everything has knock-on effects in this game. Well, it's just that Warcasters and Warlocks don't die. Or if they do, they're back shortly.
Kallus dies.
He never was alive.
No, very true.
Yeah.
We don't know if Karchev's dead.
Yeah, Karchev was ripped from his...
Well, I was going to say, it depends if you've been listening to the fluff spoilers, but...
Anyway. Please do not spoil it, please.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil...
Not at this stage for this book, no.
Yeah.
No, we can spoil stuff that's been out a number of years, well, over a year.
No, I agree. Yeah.
I look forward to sitting down with Colossals going...
while it's out. It comes out today.
Oh, yes, it did, didn't it? Oh.
Yeah. Wednesday, I thought.
Yeah, it's Wednesday. It's always Wednesday. Okay. Please.
Fair enough.
Well, we can pretend it's Wednesday. It's a podcast. It can come out whenever we like.
Yeah, it came out today. Woo!
There we go. right. So that I think, you know, that discussion having been done, that's the news, as it were.
Light news.
Yes, the light news for the dark side. This past weekend in the UK. There was a rather large tournament that we were all at in various roles. And that is the European Team Challenge, the full name.
Yeah, Odds and War Machine European Team Challenge.
There we go.
2012.
Yes, 2012. Well, you've got to have that right for the hashtag, to be honest.
Yeah.
Despite the... I think there was almost a lack of tweeting from most people in there because... The 3G signal at Maelstrom is a bit dodgy at the best of times. So we just thought we'd go through people's experiences there. Nick and I went as part of Team Elite Cadre. Was meant to include Alex and Kurt, but they decided they had better plans.
Better plans.
I was going to say, Alex, you had a better offer from Norbert, so...
No, I dropped out. I'd made the decision to drop out before I had the opportunity to come on board with Norbert in a role as a referee.
Fair.
Just weren't feeling it this year or something like that.
I'd kind of obviously been to the Masters, and, I mean, yeah, as is often the way when you get events packed quite closely together, I wasn't particularly flush with money. Couldn't really justify sort of 2 weekends away from the wife and kids in 2 months, and that was kind of a big factor in it. And I don't know, I wasn't quite feeling it, like you say, Norbert.
Mm.
I made the decision not to go, and then obviously Norbert was after Pressgangers. Obviously we're going to cover Pressgangers in a little while, but I'm not a Pressganger yet. But I'd kind of mentioned that to Norbert. I said, you know, it is something I'm looking to do in the near future. I'd love the opportunity to come and take part, to be there, to kind of witness the ETC, and kindly let me join in.
I think it is important to stress that just the scale of the ETC this year for anyone who wasn't there. I mean, it was it 216 players or something like that in the end?
At the final count, yeah.
I mean, 216 players. In Maelstrom, if you've ever been there, I was separated over, I'd call it three halls, because the top floor isn't really one hall.
Right.
But that is a vast amount of players and a vast amount of dice rolling going on all at the same time. I thought it was particularly impressive over the weekend, given that there were 216 players there. each with 150 point list, to just see that amount of painted miniatures in one place is really impressive. And furthermore, to see that table of storm walls on the second day, just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Does anyone know where that conquest came from? Because yeah, I didn't see it at all, other than in the picture. It was there, someone took a picture of it, and it was gone again. It was like, okay.
Yes, there was one group shot of all these storm walls, but then hiding out in a tower was Nick's Mountain King. Is it George?
George, the Mountain King.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Really? What were the names of your dyers? I can't remember.
Bill and Ted.
There we go. Are you sticking with the Richard Loxham factor on those?
The Richard Loxham factor?
Yeah, if he has two of anything, he names them Bill and Ted.
Does he? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Must be a common thing for people of general age. Anyway.
Just go on excellent adventures.
Unfortunately, I'm stuck on a bogus journey. Anyway. But yes, there was one Mountain King and one Conquest painted in sort of beigey colours off to one side. It's like, how did that sneak its way in here?
No, I thought it was impressive the overall number of people there, because even in the United States, I don't think there's been ever a as large single War Machine event ever, as far as I know, which is really impressive that it was done outside the United States.
I think it being a European event helps there as well, in that there are some teams that, I mean, they travelled from far and wide. I mean, there was a Swedish team, a Finnish team, a Belgian team.
German team. There were a couple of Dutch teams. There's Team Netherlands and the Cheeseheads.
Played Team Netherlands. They're very nice guys.
Yeah, I sat and chatted to them for about an hour after our game, something like that.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of playing one of their guys myself on Saturday evening. Got destroyed by Molik Khan.
The Zal player, yes.
Yeah, Kevin, I think his name was.
I think one of our pickups played Zal, didn't they, Mike?
Yes, I can't remember whether it was Simon ben. Or Ben. But...
I think it was yeah. Ben. Because I was that's kind of how I met Kevin and kind of got chatting to him. I was reffing that kind of area where you were playing, and I sat down a couple of times and watched their game as it was playing and kind of helped with a couple of questions and measurements and kind of line of sight and things. And after the game, which was quite a nice touch, Kevin kind of said to me, thanks a lot for helping out with that game. You know, it's great to have kind of referees there and, you know, being active and making themselves known and kind of, you know, there to help, really. So
I will say that throughout the whole weekend, with the possible exception of the Friday night, but that's a whole other realm. The judging team was always on hand, was providing very consistent rulings on stuff, was just, you know, what you want from a set of judges. Right down to the fact that errata on the storm pods, I believe, came in halfway through the tournament. And because the tournament had started with a different set of rules, it was, okay, we're going to stick with these until the end. We know they're wrong, but we need to keep it the same for everyone so that it's fair.
And that was something that I was particularly keen on kind of getting out there, because you don't want to kind of have a situation in a game where one person's playing it one way and the other person's playing it the other way, and then it kind of comes, oh, well, it's been errata today, so officially we should be playing it this way. So,
yeah. I think the whole event in that aspect was just really well handled. I'd just like to congratulate actually both of you, Alex and Norbert, although sadly it galls me a bit with Alex. Yeah, it was...
Thanks, Mike. Love you too.
Oh, cheers. No, it was just superbly well done.
Yeah, I have to congratulate Alex again because...
Norbert.
He did a really, really good job on the weekend, you know. Being the first timer, I didn't know what to expect really, but he clearly had studied up on the rules. He also had the books to hand. He was very methodical in the way he handled any kind of rules query, and came over and discussed things with me too, so we could have kind of a debate about things. even in advance of stuff coming up. And then he didn't have to be asked to help out when it came to doing other things, like setting up terrain, marking things off. You know, he just generally kind of knew, you know, we explained what we needed done. And then for the rest of the weekend, he just got on with it and did it without being asked. And that's exactly what we needed at that event because it was so large and so chaotic at sometimes. So it was excellent to have that surprise, like that level of competency on the team. It was great.
I was surprised at how small your team was of refs, but they all did an amazing job, and it didn't feel as small as it was for what they were covering.
Cool. Great. I'm really pleased to hear that.
I was going to say, did you feel like you have the right number of people there to cover the job, or did you feel sort of under pressure some of the times to sort of cover certain areas, or...?
I don't think so, and I didn't hear any of the other guys complaining about that sort of thing. We basically had one person on call downstairs, one person on call in the side room, and then two people in the main hall where each was responsible for one half of it. So we had kind of like a zone defense going on by design so that people could get used to the way those people make calls and that they would know who to look for and stuff like that. The only time we changed that was on the last day. When it came to the top tables, we moved them downstairs into the bar area, and then me and Alex covered this. So we did a two-man gang up on that one, because usually I would float throughout the whole thing to make sure everybody could get access to me. But for the finals, we wanted to make sure we had double coverage in the same room. So then me and Alex spent the day down there, and the other guys were up in the three areas on the second floor.
To be fair, I think for those final two games, having that little bit of extra coverage on those tables where it's more likely that a ruling is really going to matter. I mean, not saying that, you know, rulings on all tables don't matter, but, you know, those top tables where people want exactitude at all times.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, even then we had a tough time, though, because even though there was only like two teams in contention, because of the way the buys and things worked, we actually had four teams in contention at all times, which meant that there were 16 people playing between me and Alex to kind of cover, which is a lot. That's like the size of a normal tournament, really, in most places.
Well, I mean, this is by no means a normal tournament for the kind of scale. I suppose we should talk roughly about the format we're looking at for people who aren't familiar. The ETC was a team tournament, four people per team. There was a pairing system when you got drawn against another team, but it's long and complex, and quite frankly, I didn't bother to learn it. This is why Nick was team captain, because it meant I didn't have to learn anything. We just sent him off into a corner, and he sorted things.
I did make the mistake of not really getting to grips with the pairing system until the actual event itself. But we were lucky enough to have Ben Curry on our team, who showed me how the pairing system worked once, and that was it. It was like, oh, that's actually really easy.
Well, to be fair, there is one thing you can say about that, and that is the fact that we rocked up for the first game, we're about to do the pairings, Nick was sat there, didn't really quite get the pairing system, and Ben went, that's okay, don't worry. It's my pairing system. I was like, okay, fair enough. You're the guy who designed it. You tell us how to break it.
There isn't really a way to break it, though.
No, there isn't. But yes, so I mean, you've got the two teams face off each round, and it's decided on tournament points, then CPs for the team. Then APs for the team, and
tournament points outright. If you have a draw of two wins, two losses on the team, you go to tiebreakers, just as normal steamroller would go to tiebreakers. So the first tiebreaker you look at is which team scored the most CPs. After the most CPs, you look at which team destroyed the most army points. If it's a tie, then it's a tie. And I don't think we scored a tie the entire weekend.
I think there was one all weekend, was there, Norbert?
A team tie.
One team tie.
A player tie. Oh, okay. I saw a player
tie. There were a lot of team ties, but there was that one player tie, which is Jimmy Stark, naturally. Oh, man. He managed to get him and his opponent managed to go down to fourth tiebreaker, was still being tied. So there was an actual game draw at the tournament, which rarely, rarely happens nowadays.
Yeah. To be fair, if it was going to happen to anyone, it would happen to Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know, 9 times out of 10, it's him. But yeah, I mean, it's very unusual for a team tournament in that it's not either three players or five, so you don't necessarily have that outright winner, but most of the ties still had a winner and a loser.
Yeah. I think the general consensus, kind of, there was a bit of a, on Sunday morning, there was a bit of a, Sunday lunchtime, sorry, a bit of a general kind of feedback session where Tim, kind of the main event organizer, by way of show of hands, kind of got everyone to kind of say how they felt. And I think the general consensus was that that it was preferred as a four-player event to a two or three or five player.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's unique in that sense. I think people quite like that kind of a unique.
Well, why do you think so, though? Because here, okay, why do you think so? I have my thoughts about why it's not so good.
I'm one of the people who quite enjoy four man, and that is purely because three is too small and five is too big.
Hmm. That's not really descriptive, though, is it, Nick?
It's not, but the groups we play in, if we look, for example, at ourselves, we're a four-man podcast, we could go as a team. If we look at the club, we have eight players at the club.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, eight players that would go to tournaments, we could quite happily split into two teams. And just generally, when I look at teams, we seem to be more in favour of four-man. It's often easier to get the four-man. Three-man, you have to turn somebody away. And five-man, you have to find somebody you may not be that close with.
I think fives would be awkward, especially given the amount of organisation that went into some teams actually managing to get four, including ourselves. But, you know, that's a whole different kettle of fish. Four's nice. I think if it did change, I would happily see it three. It'd go down to three. Five, not so much. But
the problem with going down to three is that the number of rounds you need to get to some sort of result would get too high. So you'd only be able to go to five. You couldn't do more less than four for that reason. The reason I don't like four-man teams is even though there are pretty sensible tiebreakers that we invented into the system, if there's a 2-2 wins situation, it makes the next one was control points, you know, combined control points between the teams. And so that becomes now a far different game of War Machine where you start emphasizing trying to collect control points over actually just trying to make wins happen.
I just want to stress that there, Nick, we're looking for control points.
Almost this. We had a position point in one of the games where I had the option to score another control point or secure the fact that I wouldn't lose. So I went to secure the fact I didn't lose instead of taking the control point, which meant we lost as a team Alpha Strike Radio.
And then what did Cromac do anyway?
Cromac still killed Mulg.
Yes, there we go. Nick conveniently forgetting the fact that Leap exists.
Indeed.
But yeah, to be fair, it was a team effort in losing that one, so... You know, you still won your game, but it was like sitting there watching, going, Nick's going to run Janissa into the zone in a second. He'll score that second control point, and he's walking Janissa forwards, and, oh, that's not the zone. Oh, dear.
Oops.
Oh, well, never mind.
It's always next year.
Then again, at that point, we didn't know it was going to be quite that close of a round.
No, that's very true. And we had such a bloody game with myself and Rich Padgett, so...
I just know that tons of people started, and Alex was there for it too, in the last two rounds of the tournament, started coming. People would get getting calls down there because people are doing all kinds of crazy shenanigans trying to score control points and things like that.
I have, were the scenarios pre-rolled or were they set? Because if they were pre-rolled, it was quite interesting that the last two scenarios were actually scenarios it's harder to score control points on.
Oh, I don't think that logic got factored in at all, though.
It was quite interesting, just that by the time people realized how important CPs really were, they were struggling to score them because the easy CP scenarios came in round sort of one and three.
See, so anything like that, though, that to me detracts from the inherent nature, the inherent goodness of War Machine compared to other systems. I think the emphasis should always be on winning above all else.
Basically, you want winning over gamesmanship.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, I can actually kind of
agree
where
that.
You're coming from there. I mean, War Machine is a game about being on the offensive, sticking your neck out there and saying, can you do better? And gamesmanship perhaps shouldn't come into it as much. But that's all a matter of opinion anyway.
Yeah, so I just wanted people to be aware of that, though, when they started voting or with their, you know, comments or whatever they're thinking about next year, what have you, how even though it seems like real nice as four-man team, and I see why, I just wanted people to be aware that beneath the surface, that if they just took a look, you know, behind the curtain, so to speak, a little bit, how much it does affect the overall system and whether they're really then happy with it or not. That's all. I just want to bring that back to people's attention.
No, it's a valid point, Norbert.
I mean, the event itself is a very unique beast in the fact that you're in a one-list environment.
Yeah.
But then there is the ability to negate your bad matchups.
Is it Phil Lowen's you?
Is it what?
Phil Lowen's you. Well, that's unlimited, isn't it? Phil Lowen's C. Unique beast.
Oh, boy.
Bum, 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 bum.
You're not quite, you're not, I know you're trying to fill in for Kurt's witticism here. Just stop.
Refereeing okay. Jokes.
It's okay, Alex. We all have our downsides. Some larger than others.
I've That's not a nice him. Thing to say about Nick. How about Nick or Kurt, really?
Anyway, should we talk more about the ETC?
Yeah, why not?
Suppose we could.
That's what we've got Norbert here for.
Well, yes, true.
Amongst other things.
Well, yeah. We're always willing to have Norbert on.
Well, thank you.
He's a lovely human being.
That's very
he
nice.
Is the king of all media.
I was about to say, I do like the way he's living up to his king of all media nickname, because I think every UK podcast I've listened to the latest episode of, he's been on it.
Well, it's been a busy season. Don't blame me that you guys plan every major event within like 6 weeks of one another. My Lord.
It's probably not the best time to get started on that one. It's sort of people are already looking at the calendars for next year and going, the team challenge isn't moving and Masters
club challenge isn't moving and Masters isn't moving.
Club challenge is the same weekend as Masters next year.
Yeah.
It's in the mail.
It's a shame because I was quite looking forward to maybe going to the club challenge, but anyway, no, that's not ETC talk. Anyway.
Yeah. that's a whole different episode of the show. So, I mean, I really enjoyed my time at the ETC. I thought there was an absolutely fantastic atmosphere there, especially as it in some respects it's as hardcore as other tournaments, but in some other respects much less, because for the bottom however many teams it does just become okay, we're out of a chance of winning this, let's just have a good laugh.
I never realized how much I liked chess clocks until playing in this event, because the ability to start my timer and walk away from the table and have a few moments to just let my head calm down and think and come back and play was amazing for me. And it wouldn't be a game I would have otherwise lost.
See, I actually had a completely different experience with it. In that I now actually like playing with chess clocks less. Purely based on the fact that at the start of the game, we started the chess clocks and that was really the last interaction we had with the time on the game. I don't think at any point anyone I played or anyone who played me was pushed for time. Not even close.
They were very relaxed time. So if you're used to playing 10-minute turns for Masters or for other events, these were kind of the next level down. So they were very relaxed. And there were a few people that timed out. I saw a few people time out over the weekend.
Jimmy came close.
Yeah, 26 seconds left when he got the caster kill. Yeah, that's tight. But just I do really enjoy that pressure of either 10 or 7-minute time turns at 35. Maybe not hardcore timings, but, you know. Because it actually keeps the game flowing. It keeps you involved, where when you pass over the chess clock, you know that the other person could quite legitimately sit there and take half an hour just looking at the table and then go, right, my assassination's on here, bear with me, and then go through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't feel that that half an hour of looking at the table kind of works for me. That's just a personal view on chess clocks, aren't you?
When that happened with me, I often found that I would sit and talk to my opponent about what they're thinking and would just have that friendly conversation. And nobody seemed to wildly object to that. If everyone went, no, look, I just need to focus on this, I would have gone, okay, and shut up. But most people seemed to like the fact that I would sit and talk with them while they were thinking things through and go, well, have you thought about this option?
Giving your opponent options. Okay.
Well, they would talk about what they were trying to do, and I'd be like, okay, well, thought about this.
What about
if you do that, what possible outcomes have you got? Okay, and if the other outcome happens, what happens? Okay, do you really think that you need to do this at this point?
Oh, honestly, so that I never had a conversation like that all weekend.
I've never had a conversation like that in any game I've ever played.
Just because I sit there and I watch my opponent, and the constant thought running through my brain is, okay, next roll, double ones, come on. It's the willing on of the failing of their dice, which, yeah, it's traditional for wargamers. Anything but a double one. It's...
Never utter those words. Anything but...
Yeah.
You don't finish it. You say anything but, and it's okay. If you say the next line, that's it, you fail.
Anything but, that's enough to fail.
No, not in my experience. I can pass on anything but. But if I say what I need, I don't get it.
This is why he says anything but before he rolls for dig me morale.
Ugh. That's the new weakness people have exploited about them.
Ah, they're Command 7. My Doom Reaver will go here.
Yeah, that's been going for a while, unfortunately. Mike learned that trick very early on.
Well, to be fair, when I've got so many troops that cause terror or abomination...
It's okay. I'm gonna make a really silly statement here, and every troll player is going to hate me, but Digmies are overrated.
Oh, boy.
I have agreed with that before, and I still agree with it. I don't think they're bad... That's not what I'm saying, but I think they're overrated.
Yep.
Silence from the podcast.
Mm.
But that's not ETC talk.
I mean, well, could segue into ETC talk.
Yes. Could we? Really? I didn't see any Digmies.
No.
I saw quite a few.
Not in any of my games. I can't remember if I've actually played Trolls at all.
You didn't play Trolls at all. I kept you away from the Trolls.
Yeah, vitriol for Trolls and just kept you away.
The only thing that Mike has a vitriol for a lot of things, trying to keep him away from Signar all weekend was quite hard, especially when we came up against Epic Flail.
Yeah,
who were a four-man Signar team.
What factions have you got? Signar, and Signar.
I tried to give him the lesser of evils by giving him PKane.
I love the fact I love the fact that okay, Mike, your army, it's mostly melee-based, and it wants to get into the enemy as quickly as possible. Okay, so I'll put you up against 20 long gunners, 6 gun mages, PKane, and Stormwall.
Yeah.
That one was destined to do well, wasn't it?
Best than one of the Haleys.
Other option was to put you up against Epic Haley.
Haley.
Don't start this again. We know he's wrong, Alex. Just move on. Although, to be honest, I have faced Epic Haley quite a number of times, and I think so far, Nick, you're the only person to beat me with Epic Haley.
Exactly why you couldn't face her when Brett Wilkie was playing her.
Actually, that's a good point. Yeah. Brett Wilkie, wargaming god. Yeah.
He won Best General the weekend, did he not?
Yes, he did. Best Signar.
Best Signar, best General. 6-0 undefeated, if I'm correct?
Yep.
Yep, completely undefeated.
A lot of CPs as well. And this is something quite unique to the UK scene. A lot of the UK players don't play for Scenario. Brett is one of those people who focuses so much on Scenario, but won't give up the assassination attempt if it presents itself.
I actually had a comment on this from one of Team Netherlands. I can't remember his name. I really do apologise for that. But he was playing Harbinger, and we were doing the Three Flags scenario.
Incursion.
Yes. See, you can remember things, Alex. Playing Incursion, and I'd sort of split my force up a little to go for both flags. And he sat there at the start of his either second or third turn and went, you play differently from the rest of the British. And how? It's like, you're going for the scenario. I don't like that. Then proceeded to nuke me off one side of the board, but, you know, at least I got a CP. I was happy with that.
Not much more you can ask for.
You could ask for an assassination win against Harbinger. That'd be nice.
I got one of those over the weekend. I used my Mountain King. Norbert took a picture. And then, then he proceeded to try and disqualify me from the tournament and made me replay the game.
It was stretching the, you know, amount of fairness.
Yeah, playing
what, it was too unfair on Nick for him to use Mountain King, so...
Yeah, he was putting it down, saying, look, this is a proxy for Mold, is that okay?
Mold kind of 5-inch base. Oh, my God.
There's a large base under there somewhere.
It's really just a collection of large bases. They're just squashed up very tight together.
Yeah.
But, I mean, overall, then, I think for everyone here, it was a good weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
I think, you know, there were some, you know, comments made to the negative, and if you really want to find out about those, then the Warhammer Forum will give you a very full picture of both the positives and the negatives of the weekend. But I think overall, a very fun time for all, and I certainly came back absolutely shattered just from the amount of playing games and talking to people and just general stuff.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say the real gauge is, do you want to go back again next year?
I think I'll definitely be back next year in one capacity or another.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would be very happy to go back there. Unless someone decided to make me team captain, in which case I would run for the hills. I like the whole, I turn up, I have a list, what table am I going to? This one, cracking.
To me, the being, as I stated more, and I wasn't disappointed, but I've stated in the past, be part of the largest War Machine single event ever that I know of was really exciting. I was also excited about the fact that about a third or so, maybe a little more, of the participants were outside of the UK, Europeans, was really exciting. So all these people who have far different metas and who actually sometimes have very emerging kind of scenes came out and were suddenly part of this big experience. So you could get all kinds of different, you know, discussions going on about things. It just made everything seem so fresh and new again. And just the potential and excitement of the just the whole system just seemed so vibrant at that event. That's what I liked about it.
I think one of the, just on sort of possibly a closing point now, one of the wonderful unique parts of the event is the fact that there is this very nice cool down time between rounds. It's six games over 2.5 days, really. But you often get, you know, 90 minutes between the games and then sort of a long stretch in an evening. And it's nice to just have that time to wander around, find people you haven't seen in a while, and just sit down for like half an hour chat with them. And it's a great community spirited event in that vein.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, I definitely have to give a special shout out and thanks to the Belgians, because they brought me one of their special Belgian beers in a bottle, which I thought was really, really nice, considering they had to travel so far to actually drag along some bottles to give out. They were giving a few out to some people, and I got one of them. So I wanted them to know I just actually drank it while we're doing this podcast.
How fitting.
Well, I think Team Dooley's were giving out free samples as well.
Yes, I had one of those too at the end of the tournament.
Dooley's Disciples. Toffee liqueur.
Yes. Dooley's is quite nice, though. So, but anyway, I think that can nicely wrap up some thoughts on the ETC there.
And I think it's a good time to head to our halftime break.
Is it? Is it really? Do we need one? Okay. Yes, we do. We'll see you guys on the other side.
Other side of what?
Other side of what?
Dawn.
Well, welcome back. You are now on the other side, whatever that may be. And we're now going to have a bit of a chat with Norbert about press ganging and press gangers and what it is to be a press ganger and just generally how to apply, how what to do, you know, an idiot's guide.
I thought this through far too much, Alex, because there was nowhere I could interrupt and start talking about the mercenary models. I was waiting. I was waiting, and you just didn't leave me any opportunity. It's like, damn it!
Well, you see, Alex's experience from interrupting me in the intro of every single show, so he knows if he just keeps on talking...
There was one I didn't.
There we go. Oh, dear. Yes, we thought with this that a lot of other podcasts mention press gangers and press ganging an awful lot, but there's very little of what that entails and who these people are and you know, what kind of role they play in the community. And I think Norbert is a star guest to have on here, really, because he's experienced press ganging both in the US and the UK.
Yeah. Internationally.
Yes. Anywhere else as well, Norbert?
No, not so far.
We did at one point in a TCG have some English Channel judges, because it was the only tournament that had been run in the middle of international waters on a boat.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was only for a card game, and it was only a 4-person tournament, but it was enough to actually get it into the system and confuse a lot of people.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it was like, what country was it in? International waters? Ah. We'll come back to you with a solution for that one. Hang on. Sorry, Norbert, do you want to step in here and talk about the press gangers?
I mean, the first thing I'll remark on is... that is definitely quite a different scene for press gangers outside of the United States compared to inside the United States. And we've heard allusions to that and from Boosted Damage guys and things like that. And I talked to those guys before I came over here, so I had kind of a sense for it, but even still, it was quite different, even being prepared for it, about how things are here compared to over in the States. I mean, the first thing is that in the States, we have so many retail stores that host the places to play. We don't really have clubs. There are a few clubs, but most of the people just play at their local store. And so it is a much easier relationship to establish between a press ganger and the store owner, because the store owner has multiple systems that are going on there, so they don't learn everything necessarily. So basically the press ganger is there to help kind of nurture that club and grow it, and also to run the tournaments there, and basically just handle everything that, privateer press oriented, usually in conjunction with the store owner or manager, but generally just kind of running that whole operation. And that's really not, as far as I can tell anyway, that isn't as common here in the UK.
Well, I think that the whole proliferation of clubs over stores, because we tend to have a few big stores, but they're very far spread around the country, to be honest.
I think that the one kind of thing that kind of stops us having as many stores, as it were, is Games Workshop and their proliferation of stores over here.
Yeah.
Whereas in the US, they're kind of a lot more sparse with their stores. There is the opportunity for more local gaming stores to be and to kind of to operate in that area and to kind of live off that GW and Privateer Press kind of product.
Yeah. So then the next thing is that the few areas that have a store here in the UK, the big lesson I've learned, I mentioned this elsewhere already, is that the store owners generally have like an event organizer or tournament organizer that does run like everything and all the different aspects of the game and things like that. All the kinds of things that press gangers in the United States are generally accustomed to doing. So that's quite a bit different. In fact, one guy, I remember a guy just here in London remarked to me, he's like, "Oh, well, we don't really need a press ganger in this club because everybody already plays War Machine, and so there's no need for a guy to run demos." And I looked at him, and I'm like, is that really all you think press gangers do, is run demos? I'm like, maybe if they're not any good. I mean, that's only one part of their job, in my opinion. You know, to me, again, this could be the U.S. bias, I don't know, but you know, to me, a press ganger is there to generally promote the club or the store that he's in and make sure that it is a healthy and productive and growing community of War Machine players. So that includes demos. Demos is definitely an important part for bringing new people in it. But to me, it's also organizing events for the club, you know, organizing inter-club challenges, making sure people kind of have are constantly, you know, discussing the game to improve their game, you know, help make sure people are helping each other, doing charity events, you know what I mean? Just generally growing a community, because having, simple, to me, a philosophy is having a vibrant growing community, a vibrant community is a growing one. So people will come to it and are attracted to it if they see a life and an excitement and a fun time there. You know, that's what it's most important, I think, for a press ganger to be doing.
I think the thing over here is that a lot of the time people will have, clubs will have someone who, if someone just walked into the club, they would assume they were a press ganger. I mean, certainly at the Dudley Dark Lords, we have Tim, the legend, Martin.
Right.
Who organises? He doesn't organise so many tournaments now, but he's organised a lot of tournaments. He organised a Food Machine tournament as well. He used to organise Battle Box tournaments at the club every so often, just get as many people as he could involved. And he's really the sort of the centre of, you know, the club's War Machine activity. And he's put a lot of his own personal time and stuff into that. And when I first started playing, I kind of assumed he was a press ganger.
Yeah.
It's only later that I found out, oh, he's not.
Yeah, exactly. Tim Martin is a perfect example of what a press ganger should be, and I keep badgering him. I don't know why. I don't know him well enough to ask him, you know, why he hasn't just done it, or if he has and has had trouble with his application or whatnot. I don't know. Because he does exactly everything that I think a really, really good press ganger does. So, I mean, it's different here because a lot of the guys will do that sort of thing on their own now. And I'm not sure really why they don't feel like they, you know, because if they just became press gangers, they could enjoy so many more benefits and make their job so much more easy and also more interesting because of some of the access they get to do all the things that they do now, just to be even better at it.
Well, there's a whole press ganger sort of almost network, isn't there?
Right.
Of, you know, supporting each other and throwing ideas around, and I think as well sort of painted model swaps on some level as well, and so just little things to sort of help each other out.
for the ETC, there was no press gangers available for it when they asked me to become head ref. And so the first priority I had was to try to, you know, put together a team. And so my first reaction, of course, was to go to the press gang on the boards and through other channels to see, you know, who is out there that I can trust to help me, because I was quite insistent that I wanted this to be as tight and as well run a privateer press event as I could get. And to me, that meant that it needed to be helmed by press gangers. And we've invited Alex along, who's not one, but specifically because he mentioned to me that, you know, this was his entree into you know, the application process and wanted to become one. So I felt that this was with me there and a number of other press gangers being part of it, we could have him there as a learning experience and also part of a little bit of you know, a show of his dedication to what he wanted to do there. And in support of his application. So that's why we had him along. And I think it was really important to me to make sure that people saw the press gang there and the kind of people we are, good volunteers, ready to pitch in on it and anything, with our primary purpose being to make sure that people are having a good time.
I think it's something you accomplished. It's obviously something you've sort of, it's something you've worked on throughout your time as a press ganger, really.
Yeah, that's been my only goal, is really to see people having a good time no matter where I go. And so that was one of the challenges and excitements that I had when I moved over to the UK. Was, you know, I'm not going to come here and immediately try and make everything like at home, because that's not the purpose. You know, I'm here to actually learn about how people do things, but at the same time try to share some of the good things that I know and how to do, and, you know, ultimately make where I've been a better place than when I showed it in many different respects, you know.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I mean, the experience at the ETC was fantastic. And like you say, there is so much more to being a press ganger than even just that, than even kind of officiating events. It is so important to be passionate about the game and the hobby, and maybe not even passionate about playing the game, because you don't necessarily need to be playing it all the time to press gang well and to kind of, to be able to share your passion with other players.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what it is you like a hobby so much that you want it to grow and you want it to be, you know, I always say our hobby is way too small to be fragmented, you know, and have all these silly disagreements and, you know, people just being kind of separatist about things. We need to be together in on this, keep it growing, keep it being big, not for the sake of the company. I'm not here doing this because, oh, I want PP to be like, it's, you know, massive behemoth in the hobby, that is nice goal, whatever. It's really only because I want to make sure that there are enough people to play against and that we have a nice, interesting community that's constantly evolving. That's the fun part, you know, it's about the people. It's funny because, you know, people go to events and they take lots of pictures of things, mainly models, though. They tend to focus on the models. They'll take picture after picture of tables of models. And I never find this terribly interesting. I like taking pictures and I looking at pictures of people playing the game. I like to see their faces and what they're up to and the kind of reactions that they're going while they're playing the game, because I think that's the more interesting thing. You want to see people who were there, who were part of the experience, not just the odd model. I like close-ups of best painted models or nice conversions. Those are interesting, but just like random pictures of the models on tables, just, I don't know, because to me it's about the people.
To be honest, just going off that, part of the reason that I'm in these kind of wargaming hobby areas is because it's a great way to just get out of the house, meet people, talk to them, and have, you know, a fun sort of face-to-face game. And, you know, you could just sit at home, play something online, and, yeah, you can talk to people over a headset, as we're doing right now, I suppose. But there's no real replacement for getting out there and throwing down some dice and sort of sharing a game.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I encourage people, I'd love to have any of your listeners, if they're on the fence about this or they have a different viewpoint, I'd really, really love for them to write in and maybe you could pass the message on to me so I could talk to them. Because I just love to know.
You will become a press ganger.
No, I'd just love to know what it is about them that they aren't doing it. Like, if there's a problem, or if they don't just see the benefit. In particular, they don't see the benefit of becoming one, because privateer press is not as prevalent here as they are in the States, and so maybe that's the issue. We could pass that sort of message on to the headquarters people, you know, about the kind of involvement or just the visibility there. I know that Cerberus, which is like the European arm of Privateer Press, the owner there, Bob Watts, has become really kind of quite resurgent in his energies that he's putting into the scenes of various countries. He's become more visible here in the UK, and it's really begun to show. I mean, UK Masters was a huge success today, this year, because of the extra involvement he had. So, you know, I think there's a lot of benefits to people doing it, and there's very little like you have to do. You know, the application process is a little long. I mean, there's a few questions you have to kind of write a couple of paragraphs about, you know, why you're doing it and this and that. And I think there are things that there aren't hard to answer, provided you're doing it for the right reasons. It's really not hard. And then after that, once you become it, I think they want you to run something or do something, some sort of club event once every month, once every 2 months or something like that. And even if you can't do it for a while, if you just write to them and tell them that you need to take a break for this reason, that reason, they're like, fine, no problem. They just want to make sure that you're staying active, so they don't have just these inactive people involved. And so you do get a tiny bit of compensation when you run events. You get points that you can then spend in the Privateer Press store to get models. So there's a little bit of compensation. So that's nice. It doesn't make up for all the time and effort you put into things, but it doesn't matter. It's just nice. Right. So you know, just to wrap up, I mean, it just doesn't seem like very much, aside from the requirement to run things now and again, which is something you probably want to do anyway, is there a reason not to be one, and so many upsides to it?
Well, I was going to say, as someone who's been involved in similar programs in past, it's always good to sort of be out there and meet bits of the community and watch the club you're working with grow, and see more people having more fun more of the time.
Yes.
I mean, I was involved in it was a card game society in Birmingham, and that sort of went from 6 or 7 people to holding, I think it was a full hall of people at one point. Yeah. Only a smaller hall, but it was packed to the rafters.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And getting that kind of community going, it's a good feeling. So, you know, if you're involved in that kind of community building for War Machine anyway, it's worth putting that application in, I suppose.
I mean, I was going to go very similar way Mike's just gone. In the past, I didn't come from a wargaming scene to come into War Machine. I came from a card gaming scene. And I've been what would be the equivalent of a press ganger in 2 or 3 systems, and the difference between what seems to be expected of a press ganger and what was expected in there is exactly what you said at the start, that people expect you just to teach somebody the start to the game and officiate games, and that's it. That's all they used to expect of you in those systems. What then later happened was they started to realize that they had these people who loved the game, and they were only using them to teach some new players and to run games. And it's like, well, why do we not use the love these players have for the game to keep the game going? And I'm trying to do a really bad explanation here of what came, but they did start to do that. They started to offer, it wasn't monetary compensation, but like product compensation, never quite as much as you would normally do, to get these people to travel around the country, travel to the clubs, travel to stores. They actually had a thing with a store that was here called, used to exist a couple of years ago, is gone now, called Woolworths. And they had demo games going in the store, grabbing Joe Bloggs from the street and going, hey, come check out this cool game. Mm. And it worked quite well for them. And that's what press gangers sound like they do in the US. They sound like they keep the game alive with their love of the game.
Yeah.
Whereas here, people are still in the position they were with the card games of, well, you're here to teach this new player how to play and judge my events.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, Nick, you're going to having experience of the judging side of events soon with the, and I'll just, you know, throw in a plug here, with the Midland Steamroller series.
Yay!
You can buy tickets off Rankings HQ or the Warhammer Forum. I'm sure we can put that in the show notes, Nick. Yes?
Yeah, we can put that in the show notes, definitely.
Yes, if not, I will edit them in there myself.
your tournament organizer and your head judge are talking to you right now.
Yes. Yeah, anticipate fun times there. But yeah, you'll get plenty of judging experience there to put on your impending press ganger application.
When I paint the men off.
It's when you paint your men off.
Well, Alex is also, you know, he's suddenly gone from somebody who likes to run things at his club and actually doing some tournaments and now, you know, officiating a rather large event to, you know, what's changed your mind now to actually make it official, so to speak?
Well, I mean, I've been thinking about it for a long time. And like you say, it's kind of just for me, I would like to get more involved in kind of running the big events. And in order to do that, really, kind of the press gang status is quite important. I think I'm passionate about the hobby, and kind of at my club, it's fallen on a bit of a lull at the moment. And, you know, there's a couple of people moving away has meant that there's not been so many players there. And it's to be able to kind of grow the community and get more players, and in kind of a selfish way, really, because I want more people to play against.
Yeah. But,
you know, that's not what it's about. I want people to be able to enjoy themselves and to, you know, sort of see people playing other companies' games and maybe not enjoying themselves as much as they could do, and kind of scratching their head, looking confused while flicking through a rule book. And I kind of think to myself, you know, let me show you this. You know, yeah, you may need to look at the rule book every now and again, but everything's clear, everything's concise, and, you know, I want people to enjoy themselves. And
do you find that you like everything to be exact as well? Like everything to be played to the rules? I don't know if that's just me, but when walking past tables, for example, ETC, I was stood watching a game. I saw things being misplayed, and I actually had to hold myself back from interrupting the game.
Sure.
Because it's like, you don't play it that way, but I don't want to interrupt on your fun.
Yeah.
And it's
I think if you're running a demo game, you know, If maybe someone is maybe struggling to grasp a certain rule, you know, kind of brush over it and kind of move on and keep the game moving. But yeah, I think definitely in kind of a fun game, because I mean, at the end of the day, a fun game is only fun if both people are having fun.
Yeah.
If one person is abusing one rule and kind of using it for their fun, then the other person is not going to enjoy that. So.
To be fair, we accuse Dave Payne at Club of doing that every single week, so that's fine.
Yeah,
I think when you become a press ganger, you set the example for the club in all aspects. You know, you try to be a fair-minded player. You need to be a good sportsman. You need to try to be. You don't have to be perfect in the rules. You have to try to be good at the rules. You need to try to paint. You know, if you can, just a little bit, just to, you know, just be part of all things to set an example. And that does a lot. I think people look up to you as that, as opposed to assuming that you're the press ganger and that means other people, like that somehow gives you status and they have to, you know, be deferential to you or something like that. It's far from it.
So you mean people don't have to bow to you when you enter a room?
No, it's just the opposite. When I put on my press ganging shirt for some official function, and I always wear mine when I'm doing something official for that reason, is because I'm now a representative of the company and I'm a representative of what I feel is good in the hobby, you know. And so I remain humble and actually there to serve the people that I'm involved with there. And so it's quite the opposite effect when I put that shirt on than some sort of status.
See, this is the reason why we keep inviting Norbert back on.
Okay.
You're just far too nice. It's.
I try to be. Gosh, it's not always easy, you know.
Particularly when you're sharing a flat with me.
No, that was fun. No, it is. It's actually a good character builder, I think, because you're doing something really selflessly. But I like it.
I mean,
my favorite part of the event, of any event, but particularly the one we just were in, my favorite part was the satisfaction of running something so smoothly that everybody had a good time and had, you know, very little cause to complain. And so that's my self-satisfaction. And then the outward satisfaction is when I was standing at the ceremony after it was over, having all those people actively coming up and seeking me out and shaking my hand and thanking me. I mean, that is so gratifying more than anything else. That really makes me feel good.
I was going to say, I've never been sure whether that's, you know, a UK thing or not, whether, you know, I know I've always done it when I've enjoyed an event. I've sought out sort of head judge and TO and just said, you know, shake the hand and say, yep, good event. Nice one, mate.
Yeah, that means everything to people, you know, because we do it for nothing, essentially. And it's a lot of headache and time and what have you. And we don't get to play, whatever. And, you know, if somebody actually goes out of their way to come up and say thank you to me, I feel really, you know, I thank them in return for just, you know, actually doing it. Because other people may feel that way. And that's nice. But, you know, then there's the next person who takes it another level to actually actively tell you. And that means so much.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
No one said thank you to me, though.
Well, I kind of said thank you through Norbert. Yeah, no. I said thank you to you and your team. So,
you
count as part of the team, Alex.
You were too busy trolling me, Alex.
I think you trolled everyone. You were the best troll.
By the way, I don't think that you guys can call yourselves the... what is it, the podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously in some senses. Because now, Mr. Chum, I'm afraid you've got Alex there, who's, you know, a cracker on the rules, and Nick has been, even though he didn't officiate this time, his grasp of the rules on the forums as we were working through all the different rulings and stuff ahead of time was very clearly strong and fair-minded and rigorously minded. He's looked up every reference that we needed to do things along the way, so... You've got a lot of hosts now that can't claim to not to take the game too seriously anymore.
Nick just looks for those little rules quibbles. Like, how can I abuse this? Let's just take a quick look.
Of all people to be saying that, I think I should say, even though they have a rigorous grasp of rules and everything, somebody looking up the trolling of tiny little rules disputes is somebody named Mr. Chum.
What, and, me? No, yes. Never. Not I.
Well, UK Masters, a little thing about... Damage takes damage.
Suffers damage.
Who's that? Was that Nick?
No, that was Mike.
That was not entirely my fault.
No.
I don't think that was intentional trolling, though.
Yeah,
I think that was just accidental trolling. Yeah, it was very good trolling.
I looked.
No, you actually pointed out your consistency in the role, so that was good.
Yeah. Right, has that actually been finally ruled on? Or I mean, I know we're going with at the moment your sort of word on that one for Masters and the ETC. Has that one been officially ruled on or not yet? Or
no, but I'm told that a RADA document is due very soon from Privateer Press, so yeah. I'm hoping that'll be part of it.
To be honest, when I looked that up, I was surprised that had gone for as long as it did.
They haven't put out an RADA document in a little while, so you know, that might be it. Just that the timing's bad.
Yeah. Or it's just something that had never really come up too often.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, it's been there since the book was printed, right?
And all
around. It's just shows to show you that, you know, we're hard on the designers as they release something because then, when it gets out into the wild, mistakes get picked up pretty quickly. But here's an instance where even the vast majority of players over a vast amount of time still didn't pick something up. So it just shows you the depth and interest of this game. Has to it. It's never going to be fully explored.
I think the thing is as well that in a system where the rules are laid down so very precisely, if you find that one thing's like that doesn't quite fit, it always niggles at you until you go to the rules forum and go, okay, how does this work? And it's very nice to have that facility there. However, I feel we've diverged somewhat away from. Is that conversation done now? I think we've talked about press gangers, their role, and you know, building a community around them, and quick one: if someone was interested in becoming a press ganger, how would they go about applying for it?
Oh, that is actually a good question. So I'm going to look this up while we're talking real quick. But basically, you go to the Privateer Press site. It's a link, I believe, that's right on the side on their homepage that you can do that. And I think it's under community, but I'm going to look that up. There's an application there. It'll say stores. Okay, this is important, actually, if you're outside the United States. Everything written there is with the U.S. environment in mind, unfortunately. So it'll mention stores a lot, being needing a store to sponsor you and store owners and playing in a store and this and that. I forget where it is exactly, but they have clarified that that is amended to mean also clubs if you're outside of the United States, because they've become more understanding of the fact that it's not stores that are predominant outside the United States. It's rather that it's clubs. So don't be disheartened by that. Just write what your situation is. That's the thing about Privateer Press. They actually listen to their customers and people. And so if you just write to them and explain to them the situation, what's going on, they will get back to you and tell you, you know, okay, that'll be fine. Or we need to know more about this or that. And then, you know, they'll be able to clear it. So don't be disheartened. Just try it. And if you put in your application and you don't hear within 2 months anything, don't feel bad about writing back to them about it. They're okay with that. I think they want like a 2-month window or so. And that might have been improved even these days, but give them that amount of time, but then also get back to them. So, you know, definitely follow up to make sure that it happens, because things do slip through the cracks. It just happens. Yeah, so
I think one of the reasons they do have that extended time is because they do consider people as individuals, because a lot of other companies have kind of an automated test for sort of the lowest level of community entrant, whereas Privateer actually go, okay, who's in this area, and, you know, does this person meet with what we'd want from a press ganger? And
yes, exactly. Yeah, so you will be part of a community, and it'll be people who've gone through a similar process as you. It's not just anybody that says, you know, raises their hand, which is great. So I found it. If you go to the main website, you go to the, on the left-hand side, there's all these different buttons. You click the community button, and that'll open up another set of buttons. And then you click the press gangers button, and then it'll explain a little bit about what it is that you're going to, you need for the application. And at the very bottom, there's an apply online button where you can start filling out the application.
Is there anything important you'd say that you need, before considering?
The big thing, there's a material thing, which is that you need to have either two different battle boxes or two different, what would they used to call them? War packs?
War packs.
So in other words, you need two Horde starter boxes, or you need two War Machine starter boxes. They want those painted up in your possession with pictures of you holding them. But then the other thing is to have endorsement from either your store owner or your club president, that you're a member in good standing and that you're active, and that, you know, you basically, they're ready to work with you in doing things at their venue. And after that, it's a little bit about, it's just applications more about your experience, what you've been doing in the past, what kind of a gamer you are, and why you want to do this, that sort of thing. Really easy stuff.
Just a quick question on the battle boxes as well. I mean, because, you know, it's one of those awkward ones. Is there still sort of a preference to not have, I think it was the mercenaries, retribution, yeah, and minions in quotes, yes, battle boxes? I know there was some sort of discussion of that, but
they do, and I think it's because they just don't want to mislead new players if you're going to use those for demo purposes. I mean, that's why you're supposed to have them, for demo purposes.
Yeah,
and they don't want to mislead players, new players who don't know anything about the game, into like falling in love with minions and then realizing it's, you know, got its challenges if you really wanted to play it more competitively. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, if you have somebody who's super savvy about it because he's done his research and he's like, I understand it's not a full faction, but I do want to try minions. I want to play minions. Is that all right if we do a demo with minions? You're going to stand there and you're going to say, hell yes, let's do a demo with minions. And that'll be that. You know what I mean? But if you've got a guy who knows nothing about the game, and, you know, you'll say, hey, which of these four do you like? And, you know, tell them a little bit about the different factions, let them look at the models and give them a try just to get things started, at least mildly interested in.
Well, it's always a very visual thing, your first reaction to the factions. But I just thought I'd, you know, clear that up in case some people decided to apply based on the fact, well, I've got a Minions War Pack and, you know, Legion.
Oh, I'll tell you a funny story about that, about the visual aspect of it. I had a guy once, all set on Signar, really excited about Signar, and he was looking through the latest, I guess, Wrath book or something with me, as he's like, I'm going to buy this, I'm going to buy that, and he wants to look at the newer models, and he's looking through, and they flipped through the book, and he got to like one of the splash pages where they kind of have like a big battle going on with the models in the picture, you know?
Yeah.
And it's full of Signar, so he's pointing out different models in the Signar army. He's looking at this, he's looking at that. And then he gets across to the page, and like in the background, sort of like approaching the battle, there's like a Retribution army, and there's like Retribution Jack kind of coming into the frame. And he's like, wait, what's this? Oh, I said, oh, well, that's a different faction. Those are Retribution. They're like elves. He's like, there's a whole army of these things? I said, yeah. He goes, oh, I want this. I don't want that Signar stuff. I want this.
To be fair, that's a perfectly natural reaction to seeing a faction other than Signar. So...
Oh, bam. Pow.
Mike doesn't like Signar.
Really?
He doesn't like the potential that I'm rebuying mine in the future.
The fact that you played E. Haley and nothing else against me for months on end has nothing to do with this.
I like E. Haley.
He said it right.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
He's tired.
Yes. Well, I think we're all
painting.
So, well, yes, that's a nice segue, actually. If we move on to a looks at watch, quick painting table. Nick, seeing as you've mentioned it, tell us what you're painting.
Well, I currently have an Army Painter Wargamer Regiment brush in my hand and a pewter model of a troll in a seat. And the troll's seat comes from the war wagon. I primed up my war wagon the other week and mentioned that, and I'm trying to paint it up before this. Well, I think it needs to be done by Thursday because I'm at yours on Friday, Mike.
Yes, you are.
Before a tournament on Saturday in Ross on Wye. However, the model being as detailed and how many pieces it's in as well, it's not one that you can paint up once it's together. So I need to finish painting it so that I can glue it to play it.
John Snake will be very disappointed in you because, as he says, you know, if you can't see it, you don't need to paint it.
He wouldn't be disappointed at the moment because I'm literally putting my brush straight into the pot. But that's just because I'm painting tin bits at the moment, and tin bits does not need watering down.
Depends on how old it is, but that's a discussion for another day. Okay, cool. That's your painting table. Alex?
Well, I've been painting a piece from Terrain Geek tonight. I've got a couple of their woods, kind of a base that you stick a few trees into, and I've been painting the base of one of those tonight, and I'm actually just in the process now of hacking apart the base I've built for my Celestial Fulcrum to build a bit of a pond in it. So,
ooh, very nice, very nice.
Should be interesting when it's done. I'm not sure if I'm going to like it. I may well need to place a parts order for a new huge base soon. But
well,
you know,
the thing is, if you don't try, you'll never know.
I have a spare one if you need it, because I didn't put my Mountain King on its base.
Oh, of course, yeah. You went for the scenic option, didn't you?
Yeah, he ordered the Aztec Resin Frisbee.
From a Dragon Forge, which is something else I painted this week, because I painted it up just in time for ETC. Well, so it was last week, but it was since the last time we recorded. And it was it's an amazing little piece there that Dragonforge put together.
I did look at that design. That was quite nifty if you're making that whole Aztec themed thing. I don't know why I'm doing hand actions while I'm saying that. It's one of those things when podcasting, I tend to make hand gestures when I'm passing the conversation onto someone else.
You
at
have
their picture on the screen. I also tend to make hand gestures when I'm just speaking normally.
You have the Tony Blair effect.
Steady on. Careful there. Let's
you point with your thumbs to appear less threatening.
Oh, no, the pointing with thumbs is the presidential one. You have to point with the thumb if you're hoping to be elected president of the USA.
It's less threatening. But direct.
Fair enough. Anyway, speaking of the USA, Norbert.
Yes.
Have you painted anything?
I am just finishing. I like to in the summers when supposedly it's not as damp out.
yeah.
I like to actually assemble my models and get them primed up so I can paint them when it's raining out. So I've been doing that. I've had some leftover models that came over from the United States in my shipment. that I hadn't gotten around to putting together. So I've just finished cleaning up the models for Eliminators, a battle mechanic officer, and a crook hunter. And it would be good, because if I get these all together in prime, it would be good, because there haven't been any Circle or Kador stuff coming out recently, but there's about to be. So I'll kind of be kind of up to date, at least with assembly, if not painting.
I just thought, I've not seen a Croak Hunter on the table on a table in a while, actually.
I put mine on the table against you a while ago, but no, not since then.
Yeah.
They have their limitations outside of a pure minion army, but I just kind of really like the cute little figure. So
yeah, the model is it's a really nice characterful model, I think. I mean, there were rumors at one point of seeing a whole unit of Croaks of some sort. No, I'd like to see that. Because they are, well, as they are now, they're very nicely done. But anyway, okay, cool. Myself, I have been sat here throughout the podcast, slowly dousing myself in super glue. A gun bunny has assembled itself during this process. Process, even. I know what I mean. And it's sitting next to my lovely new driller, which was bought at the weekend. Gorton is awaiting his gluing, so hopefully I can have some form of dwarven force going forward, which would be nice, just in time for Osram. I know Nick is thrilled at this prospect.
Baldur's is amazing.
It is, especially when it's on 3-point jacks.
Best spelling game.
Yeah, it is a pretty cool spell.
I want it in everything.
Well, you can't have it. I'm just going to use it to sort of line up the perfect spray with powerful attack. Just, you know, I'll just nudge you this way, nudge you that way. Yeah, that'll do. Spray. Okay, I've hit 7 of your models. So, yeah, that is my, modeling table for this episode. I think before Alex signs us off, I'd just like to say thank you to you, Norbert, for coming on. It's been very enjoyable having you here again.
Well, thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
And sometimes a chore.
I think Alex and Norbert have got a bit too close over the weekend. I don't want to ask what happened in Tim's flat.
I don't know. We had a good time. Got to know each other a lot better, which was great, because he's the quiet one of the group.
Okay. Not sure whether I should take that as a compliment or an insult.
Well,
it is. It's neither. It just is.
But to be fair, Alex, given your reviews of the last couple of Scorn models, so Alex, what are your thoughts on this? It's all right. Moving on.
Yeah. It's the problem with painting when podcasting, I think, is the takes some of the attention away. I wouldn't go as far as saying I'm a quiet one, but. Maybe I am on the podcast.
Well, you know, Chris Wood.
Yeah.
No, he really is no Chris Wood. But yes, I think you can do your reputation as being the quiet one now by signing us all off for the evening.
Well, you've been listening to Elite Cadre, apparently the Hordes and War Machine podcast that should take itself more seriously. I've been Alex.
I've been Mike.
I've been Nick.
This is Norbert.
Bye.
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 Bye. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Elite Cadre, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. Email us at elitecadrepodcast@gmail.com or find the whole team on Twitter at bit.ly/elitecadre. Music provided by Martin de Bont and Symphony of Spectres. Hi, I'm back just quickly to say a quick thank you to Ben Curry and Simon Robinson, who made up the other half of Team Elite Cadre for the ETC with myself and Nick. Ben's podcast about Warhammer can be found at baddice.co.uk. We had some very fun times as a team and look forward to seeing him again at the tournaments. The other reason I'm here is to plug once again Midland Steamroller. You can find the details for the Midland Steamroller series at bit.ly/Midland Steamroller. It's a 3-heat series taking place in Ross-on-Wye, Leicester, Stafford, and with a final in Kidderminster. The series is sponsored by Firestorm Games at firestormgames.co.uk and by KR Multicase, who have soft figures for miniatures and hard cases for soft foam. They can be found at krmulticase.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Easter eggs.
Moving on.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Moving on.
Let's go.
Moving on.
You see what I have to work with.
You don't have to.
No, I don't. I could just record this on my own. I could be like Ben Curry and his daily podcast, which is quite frankly dangerous. Anyway. Hello and welcome to Elite Cadre, the
you don't interrupt Mike at this point, yeah? You need to make sure you keep quiet.
I remember.
Okay, good. Okay.
Moving on.
Pile of blister packs just falling over on my desk. That's
moving on.
That's smashing.
Literally.
No. The driller is on the other side of the desk. That's fine.
That's what she said.
Oh, boy.
We're just trying to delay it till Kurt gets home.
I hate to break it to you, but Kurt will already have been at home for like an hour and a half at this point.
No. His train was cancelled. He had to get a boat. He's
awesome. Still on the boat away. Anyway.
Alex has gone looking for him.
Who's eating the microphone?
Alex. I'm not eating the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're either eating it or rubbing it on your crotch by the sound.
You're talking, Mike. What can I say? We've broken Nick.
Nick, yes. Kindly stop corpsing. In through the nose, head through the mouth. Right.
That's what she said.
Oh, God. Right.
Compose yourself. I'm now crying with laughter.
Compose yourself, gentlemen. Hello,
Alex. Is it now?
Ah! Yes.
It was now. Oh, damn it. Sorry, mate.
Yes. I'm not taking
it. That was bad timing on my part. I apologize. It's not right. It's certainly not right at all.
That was awesome, Norbert. Thank you.
Yeah, that's an outtake.
I don't feel I can let you continue, Mike. I don't think I can do it.
You know, if he only gets through like those two sentences and then the podcast goes smoothly after that, it's the rough start.
Yeah. Go on, Mike. So, go on.
If Mike would only finally just do it, we could get going.
Compose myself. And what I thought was really impressive was actually seeing the fact that almost...
Whoa. Brief musical interlude there.
Ah, you're listening to Smooth FM.
Elite Cadre brings you smooth jazz.
Nice.
You're here on 91.7 Smooth FM with Mr. Charm.
is it not 75 YKK?
Oh, no, we're not doing the whole American radio ident. That's just silly.
We're a British podcast, didn't you know?
We're a local podcast for local people.
I believe I mentioned it as Dear Old Blighty when I went on V-Turn. With the specially sped up version of the music so that just fits in the time slot they had. Anyway, side point. Where was I? Yes, I know where I was. I thought it was...
In your chair, I assume.
Well, I am the chairperson, so where else would I be?
Moving on.
Yes.
All right, seriously?
Once back... again, we return to Smooth Padre. Is your wife trolling you, Norbert?
I think she's trolling Mr. Chom.
Well, like, see, he's just used in the background stabbing buttons going, what makes the music stop?
I think you're being rickrolled, Mike.
Oh, just... It's one of those days, I think. And all I can hear in the background is my phone going as well. Luckily, it's on the other side of the room. I don't think the mic's picking it up, but...
Sit on a table shelf and not get built.
Yeah, to be fair, I've got two half-built gun bunnies in front of me, so... Because they are awkward little gits. They really are. Who would have thought something so small would come in so many pieces?
Which way do the legs go on, Mike?
Pardon?
Mike.
Which way do the legs go on?
The sort of elbow bends backwards.
Yeah, that's how they should be.
Yeah. To be fair, at least it's not like my Imperial Guard Sentinels.
Oh, God.
One of those has one leg bending forwards and one leg bending back because I was gluing it without really looking. And they have holes on both sides of the legs. I didn't really notice. I looked at it for about 5 minutes afterwards, like, oh, yeah. Oh, dear.
Something not quite right about this.
Yeah.